A lot of young adults are thinking about their own mortality these days. According to a report in the Wall Street Journal, the pandemic has a lot of younger people feeling uneasy about their future well-being, and as a result, more and more of them are writing their wills. Meanwhile, Caring.com says in 2019, 18% of 18 to 34-year-olds had a will. In 2021, that went up to 27%. And last year, the legal documents company LegalZoom said about a third of those under 35 who wrote a will said they did so because of COVID-19. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you gotten your will or other estate-related planning in order during the pandemic because you were nervous or just because you had more time on your hands? For people younger, under 40, say, what was it like to write that will? What led you to go ahead with it? What questions do you have about wills, trusts, probate, or other related matters? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jennifer Hannon is a member of the Estate Planning, Estate and Trust Administration Practice Group of Godfrey & Kahn. She also serves on the firm's management committee and is their managing partner. She focuses on estate planning, probate, and trust administration and other areas. Jen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we have these reports of Wall Street Journal and some online platforms. Is this something you're seeing in your office lately? Maybe younger people than you used to asking about wills?
I would say yes, although I think a lot of the younger people are turning to the internet for some of their advice and drafting with respect to wills. That said, we have been incredibly busy the last 2 years, and some of that, of course, relates to people facing their own mortality, as well as, you know, the possible anticipated changes to tax laws in the coming year.
I'm guessing even before the pandemic, you would encourage people, maybe more people than have thought about it, to think about making a will or making other arrangements. Is that a good guess?
Absolutely.
What are some of the problems that can happen if people that people might not think about if they don't tackle these issues?
Well, the most prominent is that property ends up going to a place or a person you would not want it to otherwise go to. Wisconsin does have, like many states, all states, have laws regarding what happens to your property on death if you have no will. We call that intestacy. And if you die intestate without a will, the state says where your property goes. And that may be to typically your parents, if you have no children, if you have children to your children, if you have a spouse to a spouse. It just depends on the makeup of your family situation and the laws in that state. But many people don't have a nuclear family like they used to, and a lot of those laws are somewhat antiquated in terms of the line of descent.
I want to talk about some different situations and then how complicated we'd want to get into for a will. I'm thinking maybe of those people, millennials came up in the conversation with children, younger children. What kind of things do they definitely want to resolve if they're making a will?
Definitely determine who you want to have the physical custody of your children and be their guardian. That is the most important thing. And in most states, that designation can only be done in a will.
What happens then without that designation, should a parent pass on?
Then the court determines who will have the physical custody of your children. And it may not be the person you would have wanted to have them.
How complicated is it to do this? Is it enough just to, for that situation? Like, I want a will to make sure my kids go to this person or this person. Can we just do that with an online form? Do we need to sit down with lawyers? How complicated is this?
It doesn't have to be complicated. It can, though, become more complicated based on your personal situation. If your sole purpose in drafting a will is to just make sure you're designating people for your guardians and you don't have a complicated financial picture, then perhaps using an online resource would be very simple for you in the short term. If your assets are becoming more sophisticated, if you own a business, if you have any kind of strife in your family, perhaps then you should meet with a professional to figure out how best to address those issues.
Talking to Jennifer Hannon with Godfrey & Kahn, estate planning expert there. We're talking about wills and other elements of estate planning. Some reporting out there is showing a rising interest in that for younger age groups, millennials, and even younger. You could join in at 800-642-1234 if you've made new arrangements in the last couple of years or you have questions about what kind of things you should be thinking about, the number is 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jennifer, you mentioned family strife. And I imagine a lot of people want to avoid leaving behind difficult situations over money and other issues after they pass on. What kind of things can we do to make our survivors get along more harmoniously or as best we can?
I don't know if you can do anything to make them get along more harmoniously, but you certainly can take some of the guesswork about what you wanted to have happen and have the legal documents in place to make sure that what your wishes are followed. And some of that is certainly that's built in the will. The other thing you also want to make sure of, and that this is in light of COVID, is making sure that if you're incapacitated for a period of time, you have the right people making decisions for you. So healthcare powers of attorney, financial powers of attorney. When you don't have a clear plan in place, even if you have no difficult family relationships to contend with, those stressful situations may bring out something that wasn't there before or was under the surface, and individuals could start fighting over who's in charge. So if you clearly have documents in place that state who is in charge, you can kind of take all of that out and the stress of the family and the stress of the situation can dissipate.
I've been asking about wills so far. I know sometimes people think about trusts. I assume that's in more complicated financial situations. First of all, what is a trust as opposed to a will?
A trust is just a contract between the person who creates it and the person they're designating to be their trustee, which states what they want to have happen with their property, both during lifetime and at death. The primary purpose for a trust, when we're talking in the context of wills and estate planning, is to avoid probate. Probate is the court-supervised process of administering a will. And many people these days want to avoid that for privacy concerns and or, you know, to avoid additional costs associated with the estate administration process.
We're talking about estate planning, wills, trusts, probate, and more with Jennifer Hannon. She's a member of the Estate Planning, Estate and Trust Administration Practice Group of the law firm Godfrey & Kahn in Madison. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions for our guest about how all this stuff works, who needs to be thinking about it, what kind of issues we should focus on, maybe your experiences. If you've made the decision to make your first will ever over the last couple of years or take the time to revise it, what are some issues you've run into? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Have you had a bad experience, maybe in probate, if someone didn't leave well-detailed instructions? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about estate planning and wills. The Wall Street Journal had a story last week about how more and more millennials are writing their wills, in part out of concern about COVID-19. Jennifer Hannon is with us, member of the Estate Planning, Estate and Trust Administration Practice Group of Godfrey & Kahn. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about wills, trusts, planning, and more. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can share an experience that you or maybe your family have had. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jennifer, when it comes to probate, what kind of things do they look at if there's not a will or a trust in place, or do they just go with state law and it doesn't matter at that point?
Correct. If there's no will or trust agreement in place, the probate court will administer the deceased's estate pursuant to the laws of intestacy, which has that backup or default line of descent for your heirs. So again, if that's not something you'd want, perhaps you should have a will in place. The other thing I should point out is not everything goes through probate, which I'm sure many of the listeners understand here, but just in case those don't, things like life insurance and retirement accounts have beneficiary designations on them. And those assets don't go through your will, they go via your beneficiary designation that you have on file with your financial institution. So regardless of what your will says, if your beneficiary designation say something different, the beneficiary designation will trump the will.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Gail is with us in Madison. Gail, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Gail?
Yeah, my question is, I can't get my father to write a will. He's turned over, like, medical power of attorney, financial power of attorney to me. The house is in my name and my sister and my brother's name. I would have access to his bank accounts. You know, he lets me know the account numbers and how much is in the accounts. But should he still have a will?
Gail, thanks for the question. Jennifer, I'm assuming you'd encourage her dad, yes, indeed, to have a will.
I would, only because I don't know exactly how the items that you're talking about are titled. If you told me that all of your dad's assets were titled jointly with you or with you and your sister or other siblings, then perhaps there would never be a probate to worry about, and therefore a will wouldn't become operative. But if he's just sharing information with you upon his death, you will not be an authorized account user. So it would be something that would have to go through the probate system. Now, if you're his only heir, or whoever, maybe you and your sister are his only heirs, and he's not married and he doesn't have any other children and he wants all of his assets to go to you, then the laws in Wisconsin governing intestacy would get it there. But again, it just makes it a little bit more organized if you have those documents in place. And just frankly, a little easier for you as the heir to manage the process if you have those documents in place.
Gail, thanks for the call and good luck to your family. Brianna joins us now in Janesville. Brianna, hi.
Hi there. I was just wondering if she could tell me when is it appropriate to have a living will versus a standard will? And if there are any circumstances in which a living will is the better option?
A living will, Jennifer.
This is a common misconception. A living will can mean different things to different people. Oh. Some people refer to a living will meaning a trust, a living trust. A trust is that document we talked about earlier that can help you avoid probate. A living will actually is a healthcare document which states your specific wishes regarding healthcare in an end-of-life stage care situation. So assuming we're talking about trusts, so living trusts, there is no threshold in terms of when a trust would be desirable. Most of the time, it's governed by how private an individual wants to be with respect to their finances. Anything that goes through probate is subject to court review, and anything that's filed with the court can be received and viewed by anyone who wants to. And so when you go through the probate process, you have to, for instance, list all of the heirs, list all of the assets of the estate, list the values of all of those assets and who's going to receive all of those assets. Many people don't like that regardless of how large or small their estate is. So they would prefer to not have to go through that process and keep everything out of the public eye.
Thanks for the call, Brianna. And how about making that other meaning of living will, the one that's more commonly assumed, I think, about medical directives, end-of-life potential directives?
Yeah, so in Wisconsin, there are two documents for healthcare instructions. One is a healthcare power of attorney, in which you designate an individual to make healthcare decisions for you if you're unable to do so yourself. And the other is a living will, sometimes called a declaration to physicians, in which you state specific wishes regarding three items. One, do you want life-sustaining procedures used if you're in a persistent vegetative state? Yes or no. Do you want feeding tubes used if you have a terminal illness? Yes or no. Or do you want feeding tubes used if you have a persistent vegetative state? Yes or no. So that's what a living will is here in Wisconsin. Very, very short and sweet, but it gets across those very specific wishes you may have regarding end-of-life care.
Thanks again for that call. We'll go to Linda next in La Crosse. Linda, hi.
Hi. My question is, if you have revocable trust, how difficult is it to switch it over to an irrevocable trust? How much is involved?
Linda, thanks for the call. Jen, can you start with what does it mean to be revocable versus irrevocable?
So revocable means you can revoke and amend it during your lifetime, change it as many times as you wish, the terms of it. An irrevocable trust means you can't revoke it or amend it. The short answer is you cannot convert a revocable trust to an irrevocable trust. That conversion just doesn't occur. Instead, you'd have to take assets out of a revocable trust and create a new trust that was irrevocable and gift them to that trust. That's pretty advanced estate and tax planning that some people do partake in, but usually those are for individuals who are concerned about a taxable estate, which is greater than $11.7 million.
Thanks a lot for the call. Hope that helps. Jen, in our last couple minutes, a lot of families will be getting together online or maybe in person for the holidays. And I've heard people encourage us to talk to family members about these issues. Not the most pleasant conversation always, but can you make the case that, yeah, get together as a family and figure out what you want to do?
So I can go either way on this. I think what's most important is people make a decision to do something and communicate it to their family. In working with families for the last 20 plus years, I think it is very difficult to convince a parent to do anything, especially the older they get. So while it's great if you have that kind of a relationship with your family to have these types of conversations, I think if you're trying to convince them to do something, convince them that it will make your lives a little easier. It may save everybody a little money on the back end. And it's important to have these conversations so that whatever their wishes are, they are complied with, versus children, of course, flailing and just trying to figure it out based on random conversations over the course of decades.
Jen, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
Jennifer Hannon is a member of the Estate Planning, Estate and Trust Administration Practice Group of Godfrey & Kahn, the firm's managing partner. Talked to her about estate planning and how to get our wills, trusts, and other legal affairs in order as reports are out there that more millennials especially are getting more interested during the pandemic in making those kinds of arrangements.